Attention, listeners. Do you ever find yourself struggling to decide what to watch on a Saturday night when you're in the mood for horror? Or perhaps you're trying to round out your own horror film education. In either case, I'm sure you'll be able to make some great discoveries in my 10x10 horror watch list, featuring a breakdown of the 10 favorite horror movies from 10 renowned horror directors. We did a deep dive of the favorite horror movies from directors including Guillermo del Toro, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, Quentin Tarantino, James Gunn, Rob Zombie, Martin Scorsese, and many, many more. Here you'll find a collection of each director's favorite horror movies, along with quotes about what they appreciated about the films, all in an easy-to-reference PDF that you can download absolutely free. Featuring a mix of well-worn classics and deep cuts, hopefully you'll discover some overlooked gems and look at old classics through new lenses. Download the 10x10 horror watch list for free by visiting nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. That's nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. Welcome to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. As always, each episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show explores how today's horror filmmakers are getting their movies made, while deconstructing their methods and career strategies into practical insights that you can use on your own horror filmmaking journey. Dave Clark is a filmmaker and creative force who's directed commercials for major brands along with multiple narrative films, including his 2019 feature, After She Wakes. Dave recently released a must-watch short film called Another, which is not only terrifying and beautifully made, but a great example of blending AI with live-action filmmaking. This film exemplifies Dave's significant contribution to the AI filmmaking landscape, showcasing how AI should not replace humans or any facets of the filmmaking process. Instead, it can serve as an incredible creative tool, adding unique and exciting dimensions to the work. Dave has really been a pioneer in the AI filmmaking conversation, showcasing what accessible tools like Midjourney, Magnific, and Runway are capable of when combined with a skilled and discerning eye for cinema. His understanding of cinema and filmmaking has seriously enabled him to get really incredible results. Obviously, in the context of filmmaking, AI is a hotly debated topic of controversy, but regardless of whatever side of the fence you're on, I would encourage you to listen to this episode. Dave is a very legit, honest-to-goodness filmmaker who loves the entire process, from being on set, to working with actors, to picking lenses, all of it. And he champions a future where AI is just another tool in the tool belt and not a replacement for anyone. Dave was also recently brought in by SAG to deliver a presentation on AI in filmmaking to over 1,000 Screen Actors Guild members. In this episode, Dave gets into the practical applications of AI in pre-visualization and post-production, and its ability to bring high-quality VFX within the reach of indie filmmakers. He stresses the importance of balancing AI tools with traditional filmmaking techniques, ensuring the human touch remains central in storytelling and cinematic aesthetics. Dave also shares his process for creating Another, his short film that integrates AI with live action, and together we explore how AI can act as a creative partner, offering fresh insights and accelerating the writing and development process without overriding the unique voice of the writer. Overall, Dave provides valuable insights into how filmmakers can navigate this new landscape using AI as a tool to enhance, not replace, their creative processes. Please welcome Dave Clark. Dave Clark, good to see you again, man. How's it going?
It's been awesome. Crazy in the world of AI and filmmaking. Great to be back, Nick.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, it seems like you have a lot going on. And I feel like first and foremost, you recently spoke to 1,000 SAG members about AI and the future of filmmaking. I want to know all about how that went.
I think because I come from a traditional filmmaking background, I feel like it was almost like my moral responsibility, since I also dabble in the AI world of filmmaking and creating. A buddy of mine, Rob Niederhorst, he's big in the VFX community. He recently did Spy Kids. I think he even did The Last of Us, a few episodes of that. Super talented dude. He actually reached out to me because of my AI work and was like, look, we should talk. I want to collaborate. Let's try to figure out this train together and figure out this ride together. So we became really close. And then he was asked to do a webinar, basically for the first for the VFX community, and then also for SAG-AFTRA, about the incorporation of AI, how that affects the VFX pipeline, how it affects like digital doubles, and kind of like the concerns that a lot of actors were having.
Yeah.
So he put on a webinar. He asked me to speak on the webinar, and I was brought in as the AI filmmaker or AI director, quote unquote. So you can imagine the response was met with a little hesitance. Like, who is this guy? Yeah, we showed like one of my little short pieces that used generative AI for The Dismal Swamp, which was a screenplay that I wrote, a concept that I wrote. So we shared that, and then I just discussed like how I see the future. And me personally, and I'm someone who's deep in and heavy into the AI community, I still want to use live actors. I still want to shoot with film cameras.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's my background. I studied film. I enjoy being on set. I think that's very important for me to get across for a lot of the people who are either against AI or maybe fearful. And I think one of the most important things that I said to the SAG, the actors and the acting community was like, look, new technology is scary all the time. And no matter what the technology is, whenever it's introduced to the population, there's always that awkward period. Is it going to replace jobs? Who's going to be affected? Is my job going to be affected? I think it's a natural human reaction to fear and be afraid and put up your guards against anything. Like,
yeah.
You remember when Photoshop came out, there was a huge thing with photographers and graphic designers that lasted years. It's still going on. The digital camera, when that came into the filmmaking field, you still had a lot of traditional filmmakers and some of the best filmmakers in the world saying that we still want to shoot film. So I feel like no matter what, there's going to be that awkward period. But I feel like there's a moment to coalesce and there's an opportunity to coalesce. And I think someone like myself, someone like Rob, are like the people that need to talk about it, right?
Right.
We are the guys who still love cinema and the history of film and the tangible and like the being on set, the practical effects. I'm a huge horror fan, so I grew up with the practical effects. Like, I still want to incorporate. I just did a short film, and my whole thing was like, look, here's a great example of live action mixing with AI, mixing with traditional VFX. And it's like, for indie filmmakers especially, it's like, I'm trying to like, especially my friends and colleagues, like educate on the fact that you can use these AI tools as exactly that, tools to enhance a vision. It's not going to take over anything. You don't have to allow it to take over someone's job or take over a film. It can be no different than using CGI, using some other computer program to enhance, which we all use.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, we're all using Maya, After Effects, Premiere, like all these things are still computer generated stuff that's coming into play when you're making your film. It's just AI has that history of being something that's trying to replace humans. And from my standpoint, I think if you're able to control that narrative, like, why not control that narrative as a filmmaker?
I feel like your approach is the approach that I think more filmmakers need to hear. I don't think AI echoes the end of cinema. I think it's like people like you who love film, who love being on set, love real actors, practical effects, doing this, just love the craft of it, who can find the use cases that are not going to replace people, but is just going to make things a lot easier and look better too. I think the implications of it with film are enormous, particularly pitching a film. I was looking at your trailer concepts and they look amazing. And it's way better than sending somebody like, all right, here's my log line and here's my deck and here's some images from the internet I found.
Absolutely.
You can just dial in your vision, and as a visual communication tool, it's incredible. I think there's so many use cases. I feel like your approach is what more filmmakers need to hear.
Yeah, that's actually a great thing that you brought up, because it was actually brought up in the SAG conversation. I mentioned the Dismal Swamp trailer that I created completely in AI, and someone had asked, well, how many jobs could you have provided in making a trailer? And like, how many jobs did you take away by making something like that? And I was thinking like, no, from the 15 or so years I've been in the filmmaking space, I've seen guys rip people's work all the time and create trailers and pitch decks and rip Scorsese's images or Christopher Nolan's images and put it in their decks and try to sell a concept.
Yeah.
And I was like, at least in this case, I'm still like creating it from quote unquote scratch.
Right.
When you're like prompting visuals and creating imagery to build a story. And I was like, in this case, I'm not taking jobs away from anyone, because if I would have done this traditional way, I would have just stole images from Tarantino and all these filmmakers that already made these movies, which everyone does.
That's why they call it a rip-o-matic, is because you're literally ripping sources from other people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's also like, you wouldn't have hired somebody to make that material. You would have done it yourself. It would have taken days, if not weeks. And exactly. It wouldn't look the way it looks. The fact that you can just dial in everything from the camera angles, the visuals, the camera lenses, the style, the lighting, like you don't have to communicate anything or with too much articulation anymore, except for in the prompts. You need to describe exactly what you want. But trying to get your vision across now, like you can nail the tone. You can communicate so much to a producer now. It's incredible.
I look at it the flip side too. So if this film goes and it sells, it's like now all of a sudden you're creating millions of dollars worth of jobs that never would have existed. And the cool thing about it is because I wrote a script, I'm just feeding in my script prompts, like my script scenes and like action scenes and beats. And that's the way the AI worked with Midjourney version 6 is it's very much like writing a descriptive scene to get your image. So you really can dial in and get what you wrote and your vision, which I think is amazing.
What can you tell us about Another? You were very generous to give me an advanced viewing of it, and it's pretty stunning what you can do with AI, specifically what you can do because you understand it and you understand the nuances of filmmaking. But what can you tell us about Another?
Yeah, it's a passion project because it was based off of a screenplay, which is probably one of the first screenplays that I might have used an AI kind of pipeline in writing it.
Yeah.
So I wrote the actual script myself, but I used a large language model. I think I used Claude AI and a little bit of ChatGPT 3.5 because 4 wasn't actually out when I started it to kind of just help with overall themes and plots. And I think people who understand film and who are writers will be able to utilize large language models for almost like a creative partner.
Ooh,
but,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't, if you've ever tried it, it's a terrible screenwriter as of now. So don't let it write your script, but it can help you get that first draft completed in record time. I think I wrote the first draft in like a week and a half.
Oh, wow.
Which is incredible. I think what it does, the best thing it does is it allows you to get your terrible ideas out there and you're not embarrassed to tell them because you're talking to a computer. So it's like, who cares what their opinion is? This is what I want to do. What do you think? They'll give you their kind of brainy, thought-provoking ideas, but then you got to take that and the writer inside you has to fix it and make it the story you want to tell. So it started there. And it was a script and it was a concept that was actually received well from a lot of Hollywood producers, things of that nature. But in any scenario, I can't really picture it. What does this look like? What does this feel like? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go make a quick little short film. I knew from the start that because I was so involved in AI that I wanted to find ways to not only obviously do it efficiently in the creation of it, but find ways to use AI as like as a VFX tool, as something that I could use to enhance like the visuals. Because, you know, I didn't have, you know, $100,000 to go make a short. I had a couple $100, right? Yeah. Obviously, any independent filmmaker knows you call in your favors, you people who know people who have cameras and access to locations, and we approached it the same typical way you would any kind of indie film or short film. You pull in favors, you get people who's excited about telling this type of story. We had actors, so we actually paid the actors that were on it. So we had live actors who auditioned, and we did that same process you would normally do for a film. But when it came to previz and the post-production process, that's where we had some fun. Rob Niederhurst, who's special effects, VFX supervisor in Hollywood. He's known for like John Wick 3 and like the Conjuring movies and X-Men. And he actually DM'd me on Instagram that he was a fan of a lot of the AI shorts that I was doing. And I was like, man, it would be great to figure out what to work on. And I was like, I have an idea. I want to do this short film. And I don't have a bunch of money to do it. But because I understand this AI filmmaking workflow and pipeline, I feel like there's a cool way to use like open source tools and even some of the subscription-based tools to create something that we've never quite seen before. And I think that's what Another ended up being.
Very cool. Yeah, I feel like there are a lot of filmmakers and people in the filmmaking world who are expressing a lot of anger about AI, which I get. It does represent a fairly massive threat. However, what you're doing, it's basically a glorified CGI tool in a way. When you think about it, it's a tool in the tool shed. I mean, you had good cameras. You had a real DP. You had real actors. You had as grounded and real of a film crew as possible. AI was just an enhancement. And you did things in your short that you probably wouldn't have been able to do without AI, unless you had millions of dollars. But yeah, I feel like I'm hearing that argument more and more, and I totally understand it, but I feel like you're an example of how AI is going to be properly used, where you're still very much a dignified filmmaker. You're doing everything as practical as possible, and AI is just a tool in the tool belt, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my day job is I'm a commercial film director. I enjoy being on set. I enjoy working with large crews. I enjoy all the things that go with being a director that you can imagine. I don't want to lose, I think, some of the reason why I got into filmmaking.
Yeah.
But because I love telling stories like sci-fi and horror and things that typically need, you know, VFX or special effects, I want to be able to like at least get proof of concepts out there. And I think any indie filmmaker should be excited about the fact that they can visualize their ideas in bigger ways,
yeah,
close to the highest fidelity you can get it. We can't make exactly like Star Wars right now,
yeah,
but you can really, for a 30 second, 60 second concept piece, you could get pretty close,
yeah,
with AI tools. Just to, again, hint at the story. Now, when it comes to the actual feature filmmaking of it all, I expect to still work with like traditional VFX artists, compositors, but alongside with kind of the AI workflow, because I think, you know, if you are a new filmmaker, no one's going to throw $20, $30 million at you right away.
Yeah.
You get lucky if you get that $1 million, $2 million, $3 million budget for your first film. I think with AI, you can do so much more with $1 million. Like you can, make it look like a $10 million, $20 million film.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I'm excited about. So ethical use of AI is always, that's what I always push. I always try to, because I'm so into the AI community and I love the community and all the stuff that we're doing, but I think experimentation and showing concepts, use all the tools you can to get your idea out there. When it comes to getting an actual budget to work and do these films and these experiments, I think still employing like some of your filmmaking crew, some of the filmmaking techniques, it's not only going to make your piece better, I think it's going to just help it stand the test of time, because as you know, these AI tools are getting better and better every, yeah, single day. So what you're doing today might be dated in 3 months.
Yep.
But what won't be dated is filmmaking and shooting something on a film camera or an Arri Alexa. That's always going to look incredible and stand the test of time. So I think there's a really cool, especially in the genres like horror and sci-fi and thrillers, like you can really use AI to just build incredible worlds. Like I kept thinking about Wes Craven doing Nightmare on Elm Street,
yeah,
back in 84. I feel like if he had these kind of tools available, like he would have probably tried to use something.
Could you imagine?
Like I wouldn't touch that movie's a classic. I just want to say Wes Craven's one of my favorite filmmakers, along with Ridley Scott. But I just feel like there's experimentation that can be done from a filmmaker standpoint that you shouldn't be afraid of. I think if anything, you should. If you think about again, Nightmare on Elm Street, it was an innovative film because he thought outside the traditional Hollywood box.
Oh yeah,
how is he doing these effects? I feel like we're in a moment similar now. It's not being completely practical with using your hands, but in a way that you are, you know, you're using your mind, you're using your ideas, and you're able to expound upon your concepts in huge, terrifying ways.
Oh yeah,
and just a more efficient fashion. I think any filmmaker should try to adapt.
Yeah, and I think it's going to get really interesting when the industry starts to embrace it, because I think it's inevitable. But yeah, when you have meetings with your DP and you sit down and you sort out shots, but you pre-viz with AI, and imagine a DP who's got like an infinite cinema vocabulary of lenses and lighting cues, being able to just rapidly prototype out shots and pre-viz a bunch of stuff, it's going to be amazing. Or you have a creature designer, a special effects makeup artist, and you sit and try to design a creature, and they have all sorts of advanced knowledge of anatomy of creatures and bifurcated maws and all sorts of terminology that like we wouldn't know. When you put these tools in the hands of real experts, real artists, and your crew of artists, when you're a director, mm-hmm, it's just going to be an incredible tool for everybody involved. But again, like just going back to the idea, I don't think anybody who's currently on a film set is replaceable by AI at all, but it's going to make everybody else's job a little easier possibly, but also yeah, you'll just be able to do so much more when everybody's using it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, cuz we did that with another. Basically previs the entire film with AI, like every shot that I ended up shooting, I generated through Midjourney, the angles, the camera angles, and I was able to work with a DP. We actually both kind of DP'd it, but we were able to look at the lighting in a Midjourney generation and say, how can we replicate this or enhance this? We knew the location we were going to shoot at, so I was able to generate similar imagery, like two women talking in a cafe, sun setting behind them, like volumetric lighting, things that you would use on a film set when you're talking to your DP, but having maybe she's flagged off on one side, so there's more harsh shadows.
Yeah.
Like I was able to previs all that before we got to set, which is great when you got 2 hours to shoot somewhere. Also,
I did record sound straight to camera because I just knew it was going to be too loud. They didn't really want us there for longer than an hour. So all of the dialogue, I had to ADR it.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to use an AI sync tool. My sound designer used a tool called Vocaline to resync the dialogue from the ADR to, you know, them talking. So yeah, none of the film was live dialogue that was shot with, that came with the actual shot. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. The tools just keep getting better and better.
Think about that. A minor tool. Think about it on a Hollywood set when you have to shoot a dialogue scene in a loud city block.
Yeah.
Like that's what that, a small use case, AI can help you. Just forget about trying to capture that picture perfect quality sound. You can fix that in post with AI tools. Mm-hmm. Like that little small nugget of a use case is huge and can save thousands of dollars when it comes to just trying to close down a whole city block.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of things. Like, so it's not like AI is going to be like, it's going to create a director that's going to make the entire film.
No.
I think the initial use of AI is going to be like these small little use cases, previs, sound, post-production. I think that's the more immediate use. And I think another is one of the first examples that can show how you can use it in small ways, mm-hmm. but still keep an integrity of a film crew and a traditionally shot horror movie.
100%. Yeah, and I think it's those little examples that are really going to get DPs of the world and other people within the industry to understand its power. Like, I was working on a commercial thing with somebody. Yeah. We had to shoot somebody and do an interview. And she was supposed to be looking at the camera, but she was reading from a script on her screen. And he's like, oh shit, we fucked up this footage. We have to do it all again. I was like, no, I can throw that into script and I can do that eye contact fixing tool. And it in 3 minutes, done. And his mind was blown. So it's just like little things like that are so easily done with AI. Yeah. How has the last time we chatted, we were just saying this was not that long ago, but so much has changed. So this was around the time you had done the Nike commercial that got a lot of attention. How has your workflow changed as far as doing these AI generated videos?
Yeah, I think it's funny because I used to just be a little bit more loose with my workflow. Mm-hmm. I used to be a little bit more loose with my workflow. Now I feel like because I understand what goes into it more because I've done it enough times, I actually streamlined a lot faster. So I usually like the same kind of idea. If I'm doing a commercial, I'll do some kind of a animatic revis of it all where it's all the static images. So it's all using an animatic to previs the entire commercial or idea. And then when I'm happy there, then I'll go into animation. I used to just generate a ton of images and animate all of them.
Okay.
Which took forever.
Yeah.
Versus lay it out with just the still images on a Premiere timeline and then really see where the story is unfolding and where you need, where there's holes to fill and then where you might want to make a clip longer, where you can extend it with a tool like we talked about Topaz, where mm-hmm. if you want to extend a clip, you can do it that way. So I think the animatic and the pre-visualization side of using these AI tools have helped me tremendously in just saving times in the long run. It feels, when you're first jumping into an idea and you're just on Midjourney for a couple hours, you just generating into the night.
Yeah.
You know, you got to remember that all those images they generate are something you're going to have to curate and go through. So I think another idea or another thing that I'm doing is just being very precious. And I know it sounds crazy because it's like you can generate a million of these things. I'm actually just a little bit more precious, I think, with my generations. I know I can get different variations, but when I find something that I like, I do maybe a few variations of that and then I move on to the next shot versus I used to do hundreds of just one shot. And then I remembered, I got to go through all of them and remember which one I liked. So I think I'm just a little bit more precious with my generations, even though, yes, you could generate into affinity. I think treat it almost like you're shooting on a film camera where you want to just get your prompts correct from the beginning. Still allow some room for exploration and just have fun. But if you're especially doing a professional project that you're getting paid for, you want to get it done more efficiently. And I think you got to use tools for that.
Yeah. I know that feeling though, when you're just going into the infinity rabbit hole of Midjourney and so many different, and oh my God, there's so many directions. After a while, you got to rein yourself in because you'll be up all night for one shot. Yeah. And it's fun too. That's the thing about it. It's fun. And then, like you said, you have to go through all the different iterations. So yeah, you got to be cognizant of that. What do you use to animate? Are you using Runway primarily?
So I use everything. I'm actually using Stable Video now a lot more.
Okay.
I find that they have great camera movement. I will say Runway and probably even Pika, probably my primary two still.
Okay.
You got Leonardo, you got Stable Diffusion Video, you got Comfy UI now. It's It's like almost like I have a set of tools now. Like I don't want to keep trying. Like I just tried the Hyper AI one that just came out. And I was like, oh, that does something different. That's cool.
Yeah.
But every time a new tool comes out, and you could imagine, I'm getting DM'd by every project, you know, product designer, a new AI tool comes out, like their lead reaches out to me on DM and says, we love what you're doing. We'd love for you to try our beta test. So I'm getting like a dozen of those a week now.
Wow.
The curious kid in me always wants to try just to know.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to just hone in the amount of tools that I use just for my own sanity.
Yeah.
And I think it just helps with my workflow. Just keep it down to 2 to 3. Smart. Main tools. So it's pretty much still Runway, Pika, and I probably think like Stable Video or Stable Diffusion for my initial animation. Unless I'm going for something that's a little bit more horror or there's gore or blood, then I'll just stay in Comfy UI or Stable Diffusion and then just up-res it with like a Magnific after.
Okay, because, cool.
You know, the open source resolution isn't as great as Midjourney, but you can still bring that into to Leonardo or Magnific. And Leonardo has a great upscaler now, by the way. I don't know if you tried it.
Oh, really?
It's
no,
actually,
I haven't.
Yeah, it's part of, because I have a... Obviously, I'm on the monthly plan, but it's comparable to Magnific and just quality. So something to check out.
Nice. Yeah, I've been using Topaz. It takes forever.
Yeah, Topaz takes forever.
Yeah, but it works. It works really well.
Yeah, you just got to put a batch in overnight and go to bed and wake up.
Yeah.
Check in the morning. That's what I do.
Yeah. So when you, going back to another, your recent AI, and how would you even categorize it? Just like AI short, or what is?
So Caleb at Akira's Refuge, he coined it live gen.
Live gen. So that's cool.
Live gen. Yeah. So he created a new genre.
I like it. Yes. I like it.
It works. It makes sense. Generated AI and live action, live gen. Kind of catchy.
Yeah.
So I used to call it live action AI hybrid, but live gen's is easier.
Yeah.
So I'm going with that right now.
The cool thing about it is it's like during practical effects. So there was practical effects for a long time, and then CGI came and put a lot of movies stopped doing practical effects. Mm-hmm. And then audiences didn't like all of this over digitization of everything. So now practical effects are back, and filmmakers realize it's all about the blend. It's all about, we're going to build as much as we can practically.
Yep.
Whatever we can't build, we're going to dress it up with CGI and little details like this and that. We're going to make the practical stuff a little bit better. But it's all about that blend, man. It's all about the recipe.
Absolutely. And I think you should think about AI the same way you think about CGI. It's like you don't want to... Someone actually made a comment on YouTube. They're like, your use of constraint with AI was incredible. Like you could have went crazy with it. And I think you actually said something too about it.
Yeah.
So if you and someone else said something on YouTube that the use of constraint was incredible, that it wasn't just like balls to the wall, AI craziness. It was like, but there was some constraint there. Like I didn't want it to be, oh, look at this spectacle of how I can use AI. Like, sure, I could have went crazy. I had some ideas like really getting into this like hidden staircase. And I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it is about finding this hidden staircase that leads to these parallel worlds. But I'll give that little hint. So when you watch it, it will make sense. But I was going to dive into that. But I was like, I'll save that for the future.
Yeah.
Like I hinted at it and some, that looks terrifying. I don't want to be in that world.
Yeah.
But that's something that I would like in the future version, like really build this crazy looking thing you've never seen before using like open source tools. Like just imagine that mixed with like some Houdini mixed with some like Blender. Like you could do some incredible effects.
Yeah.
Unreal Engine. Like just use everything. Like, I just feel like you could create a terrifying world we've never seen before because AI just dreams up nightmares.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about it. But yeah, no, that was the thing that I really noticed about your short. You didn't go overboard with the AI at all. You focused on the drama, the actual story and the characters, and the AI was very light touch, but it made it work even better. Because if it's too much, people would check out.
It's funny because people were like, some people were like, I'm trying to find out where the AI shots are, where they start, where they end. There's actually a lot more AI touches throughout even like the dialogue, some of the shots that I use to enhance scenes. That it's just so many different moments. I don't even remember where some of the AI shots are.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I think that's the whole point. Obviously, yeah, there's definitely a few shots you can say, okay, that was definitely done with an AI type diffusion model. But there's other shots people don't even know is AI that are in there as well, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
Because if you ask someone to point out every single shot, they'll probably point out the more obvious ones. But there's a lot more in there that you'll never know.
Yeah. That means you've done it right if people can't tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
So another premiered at the T2 AI premiere. Can you tell us about the T2 AI remake?
Yeah, the T2 remake was an interesting experiment. So Nem is a good buddy of mine. He actually asked me to be one of the 50 artists to do it. At that time, I think the Adidas thing had just blown up and I was like underwater with two broadcast bots I was working on. and I didn't have time to do it. I'm kicking myself because it would have been great to just be part of that. But it was great that he allowed me to still be part of the night and a part of the historical moment by letting me premiere another, basically open up the TT remake with my another short film. So that was great. And that was really cool of him to do that. But
that's awesome.
I think what he did with the remake was, and which he even mentions, it's not a remake. It's more of an experimental parody. Terminator 2 is one of the greatest films of all time. Like, it's one of the first films I remember watching as a kid on top of Alien and then Predator. Yeah. But it's like, it's one of those films that, you know, no matter how it's interpreted, I'm going to want to see it. And I think with the TT remake, he got some of my friends and some of the greatest AI artists. I think he got Jeff Synthesize, Butcher's Brain, some of these guys that I'm huge fans of, and there's mutual respect among the community to just create, you know, groundbreaking pieces that tell the story in a new, unique way using different types of AI tools. And I remember at the premiere, he mentioned this was done over basically over a 6 to 8 month time span.
Whoa.
So some of the stuff looks more dated versus some of the newer stuff. But instead of trying to go back and redo everything with all the latest and greatest, he left it in there, which I think was awesome because it is like a time capsule. For anyone who understands AI and AI filmmaking, will see it 10 years from now and be able to relive that moment because we're just so early, so bleeding edge with this technology that it's going to be great to have a film like that premiered in a theater that we were able to watch. And basically it felt like, even if you didn't work on the film, you felt like you were part of it.
Right.
Because not only are all your friends part of it, but it was just such a... Sora had just been announced, and it was like the AI film community was feeling down. Oh, man, now anyone can do this, anyone can do that. But what can we really do with these kinds of tools? But that thing came out, and then everyone was like back to creating art again, back to making AI films again. Because when Sora came out, I saw no new AI films. I was like, oh, come on, guys. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Don't wait for Sora. Like, probably no, Sora won't come out till next year. After that latest interview, we might not come out ever. We don't know. But my whole thing was like, just keep creating, like use the tools we have because you'll be that much more advanced when something like Sora comes out. You'll really understand diffusion models. You'll really understand prompting for the best type of imagery. So it's like, for me, I just keep sharpening my pencil every single day using the tools that we have. Not only were these tools there before Sora, but they're the reason why we're doing what we're doing. So you don't want to just abandon all these amazing tools that have been out for years.
Yeah.
Use these tools. These tools are only going to get better because of Sora.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think of it that way too.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good distinction. Like, don't just give up and stop making stuff. But yeah, you're right. These other tools are definitely going to keep getting better. So yeah, I think it behooves everybody to just get involved in these tools as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And just again, because I'm in the back pages of Discord, the deep nerds who like understand, who probably already built a Sora themselves. They just haven't released it. You need heavy machinery, heavy GPU to output that level of diffusion. You see what Stable Diffusion does to a local setup. It fries your computer.
Yeah.
So I imagine that those examples were done with a lot of GPU computing power, the top of the line Intel NVIDIA chips, but they're probably trying to figure out how to do a lower level, a 480, a 720p version. So right off the bat, the version that I think the consumer is going to get is not going to look like anything like those examples, fidelity wise. We might have greater movement, greater camera movement, maybe more better physics and human movement, but the fidelity is still not going to be like silver screen ready for the version we're going to get. Now, they're probably going to do some kind of enterprise model for like the Hollywood studios once they come around, some of the other kind of technological companies to have access to maybe their open source tools. There's obviously that whole lawsuit going on, which it should be open source, like Elon's saying it should be, which is an interesting conversation. But I eventually feel like it probably will be, just like the way Stable Diffusion became open source. I have a feeling that it's going to get either leaked or they're just going to let it be open source. And then whoever has $1 million GPU machine, which is going to be studios, are going to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Weta. Yeah. ILM.
Yep.
But that's... And some might agree that's probably how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like giving that level of tool to the masses maybe is irresponsible, especially with the elections and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think there is going to be some accountability. There's going to be some restrictions put around it. You use ChatGPT. You see how DALL-E has restrictions on it when you're trying to generate a certain type of imagery. So even when it does come out, it's not going to be used freely as everyone thinks. You're not going to be able to go make Matrix on it. That's not going to happen. you're probably going to be able to make really cool B-roll shots, a couple cool drone shots.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be the end-all be-all of Hollywood. It's going to be, again, another tool that if I don't want to go to New Zealand to shoot my opening B-roll shot, I'll use something like a Sora. Saves me money on that trip. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to create my whole entire diner scene in Pulp Fiction with them dancing on stage. So I think people have these. That's why it went so viral, because people are like, I can go make Inception now. I was like, no, you can't.
No.
You probably will never be able to use a tool to make Inception.
So.
That still takes real storytelling and real filmmaking skill sets to produce something of that level. But yeah, that's just my opinion right now on it.
No, I feel the same way. I think ultimately when it comes to AI in cinema, audiences want to watch something and know that people actually did this. Oh my God, a human got that shot. A human conceived of this idea. A human wrote this, because it's indicative of the overall human experience and it makes people feel understood. That's why we love storytelling. We're wired for storytelling because our ancestors told stories to teach us things about life. And as long as humans are making it, that's what people are going to want. Nobody's going to want an AI-generated Tarantino movie. They're going to want to know Tarantino made this. It came from him, somebody that we love and care about. We want to know what he thinks and what he was able to accomplish and get done and all of the effort and all of the soul involved in filmmaking. That's what audiences really want. Yeah, the AI will probably be able to poop out a fun cartoon something like that for you, or maybe it'll get to feature length movies, but they're going to feel empty. It's going to be empty calories because we need to know that humans were behind it, or else it just ceases to be real authentic storytelling.
I think you're seeing it in the AI community now, because now there's thousands, if not millions, of generations coming out daily. You're able to suss out quality-wise who's actually an artist, who's a designer, who's a filmmaker, versus who's just someone who picked up the tools. You can see the difference. You might be able to do one. You might just pick up Midjourney and create one incredible image off the bat. That's with the power of Midjourney. But to make a story out of it, that still takes ingenuity. That takes human storytelling. That takes some kind of historical knowledge of how to craft a really cool concept or idea. And that's where I think myself and some of the other people's the work stands out, because I was a filmmaker first. I didn't just wake up and say, I want to be a filmmaker today. As, I've been doing this for 20 years, trying to make it in the Hollywood system and get attention for short films and things that did great, but didn't do the level of what's going on now, because these AI tools, I'm able to enhance my storytelling and put it on a bigger stage and then create more. Like before, you could do one short a year.
Right.
Now you could probably do 5 to 10.
Yeah, just the output. Yeah. Now, I think it's a really important distinction. It is another tool. Humans are not leaving the process at all, because that's not what people want. The audience does not want it. Yeah. Let's talk about your course. So you have a course out. I believe it's with Curious Refuge, right?
Correct. Yeah. So Caleb approached me. He was obviously a fan of my work, and anyone who does AI is a fan of Curious Refuge, just because it's like that YouTube video you put on when you're waking up in the morning to get the latest and greatest news. So he approached me. He obviously was a fan of my work. He saw the Adidas thing I did, the Nike thing, the Tesla thing, and was like, I feel my students, after they do the AI filmmaking course, a lot of them are looking for ways to also get into the advertising industry, to become working AI artists or AI filmmakers. And advertising is a great space for, I think, the AI tool set, because you are creating shorter content, like 30-second pieces, 10-second pieces. I shot a directed a broadcast spot for a Washington's Lottery for VML out of Seattle. We used AI generation for images and stuff for the actual TV spot. So it was an actual broadcast spot that used generative AI. We used it on the social campaign to create little fun little 10-second videos. So there's already use cases out there where people are being paid to understand these AI tools and use it to tell brand stories. So it just made sense that a lot of these people who might, maybe they already, I can tell you this from experience. Some of my students are actually in the industry. They are creative directors. Some of them are filmmakers in Hollywood. Some of them are kids who just graduated from high school and they want to learn these tools to create content for, maybe they're coming up with their own brand or their own products. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting the gamut of students that we have there, because a lot of them are vets in the Hollywood industry. Some are music video directors.
Yeah.
Some are actual creative directors in the top agencies in the world that just want to understand these tools and how they can incorporate it, because I'm assuming their clients are asking about it. Are you guys using AI tools? Like, how can we use it to create more content for our customers and our audiences? So I'm already starting to see that changing of the guard and that kind of that turn in the industry where it was hesitance. And now it's, oh, we need to learn this, because no matter what, it's going to be applicable to what we're doing as an industry.
Do you hear about Tyler Perry?
Yeah, which is funny because his article on Hollywood Reporter came out right after my article was out.
Oh,
yeah. From the Berlin Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
Because I was quoted. It was like it made headlines in Hollywood Reporter. I said that don't be afraid of AI. Be afraid of the person that uses the AI tools. And
yeah,
like that, I think, I'm assuming he saw that. He
probably saw
and
that.
He freaked out on top of the whole Sora thing.
Yeah.
And had to like say something. But it's true. It really, I still stand by that sentiment. People are like just throwing the term AI around it, but it's really not AI. It's really just people who are going with the flow of technology. And it was like anytime you've seen this happen, Industrial Revolution, Photoshop, the film camera, digital camera, like those who complain and didn't do anything, yeah, of course you lost your job. Of course you got replaced and you were out of work because you didn't adopt. If you adopt, not only will you keep your job, you will be ahead because you are an actual filmmaker.
Yes.
You are an actual artist. Like you really understand all the complexities that go with film and art and design and architecture. Architecture is another thing that people aren't really talking about, but it's really changing the architect industry and it's really allowing them to iterate much faster and get buildings up quicker. I have a lot of friends I went to Pratt with who are architects, and they're employing a lot of incredible AI tools just in interior design, building design. So it's crazy how many industries are being changed because of these tools. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's going to touch every industry, every single industry, everything. And it's going to revolutionize each one of them. And I feel like the first principles of AI applies to all of them. I feel if it hasn't hit your industry yet, still learn how to prompt, learn prompt engineering, learn how all of this works, because those workflows and the ideology behind it, the blueprints of engineering prompts, that is going to be the future of AI within every single industry. So it's critical to learn all of this now because it gives you a foundational blueprint of knowledge that you can apply to other industries. Yeah. It's such an interesting time, man.
For sure. And I think being someone who was obviously deep in the AI community, but then also a working film director, a working screenwriter, like I can tell you firsthand, those meetings are happening. I'm being contacted by the names that you see in like Deadline and Hollywood Reporter on a daily basis. Like they're reaching out. Studios are reaching out. They're wanting to understand how these things can be implemented to add efficiency, to add more content creation. But they're approaching it in a guarded way, as they should. They want to make sure that there's still an ethical approach to how they implement these tools. So I think if you, to your point, even if you do not want to use the AI technology to understand the definition of how these are used, to understand all the innovative ways that they're going to be incorporated in your industry, you got to be able to speak to it because your bosses and your boss's bosses are going to be asking you about it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be the guy in the room who's quiet when that question is asked. You want to be the guy who can actually, or the girl who can actually talk about the technology. Even if you don't want to use it, you got to understand it. And that's one thing I always say, you got to understand it because your boss is going to ask you about it. If they haven't already asked you about it yet, it's going to be a big stand-up meeting where you want to be the person raising your hand and say, I use these tools or I understand how these tools work. We can employ them in A, B, and C way. Not only will you get a promotion, but you have job security forever.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, again, understand the tools, stay on top of it, you're not going to get replaced by AI. You're literally going to be the guy that everyone's going to view as the expert in the room. And that's the best thing that can happen for your career.
100%. It's now's the opportunity to have one of the most in-demand skills out there right now. It's not too late to be early.
Exactly. We've been in it for a year plus now, but it's still super early. Mm-hmm. Like in the grand scheme of people actually using the tools, it's very minuscule compared to people who aren't. Yeah, it's not too late. We're still bleeding edge. Everything that comes out is still considered bleeding edge technology.
Yeah.
So that's just something that I think people are also thinking about that. Oh, I would get it, but now it's just too late for me.
It's not Bitcoin, guys. It's not Bitcoin.
Not Bitcoin. It might be Bitcoin soon, but no.
Maybe. Get in while you can. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still early.
Yeah.
We have time.
So last question, it's a geeky one. What's your process for engineering prompts? Do you have a prompt database of any kind that has some of your best descriptors and some of your best key terms and stuff like that? What is your approach for mixing and matching? Because I got Notion documents that have, I put my prompts in there, but I'm still copying, cutting, and pasting and basically Frankensteining prompts based on stuff I've had the best results with. But what's your approach to just saving what works and saving your prompts and overall having a prompt database?
Yeah, the first thing I did was I made sure, obviously because I'm teaching this, I need to know it. I made sure I understand all the different prompt shortcuts, like in Midjourney. We both know Rory. He always puts out those sheets.
Amazing content.
Amazing. But if you can just remember half of those, like style weights, and now we have character references for consistent characters, like these little small little references and these little prompts, like, will change your life.
Oh yeah.
Like, I just did a spec commercial where I was able to do a consistent character of a girl who looks specific, and there's a distinct thing that looks about her, and I was able to use that throughout the commercial, which I couldn't do just a month ago. So I will say, like, when I get a great, I typically, if I'm really blown away by it, I make sure I copy and paste that prompt into a notepad. And I just have a simple, Word document or notepad where I keep my type of prompts.
Yeah.
But I will admit, most of the time, and still to this day, I have a couple keywords. Like, obviously, we all use words like cinematic. We use like camera angles. And sometimes I get into lenses. But I still get in there and I go in blindly a lot of the times. I'm almost like the way you would talk to like a ChatGPT where you're almost like having a conversation.
Yep.
I employ that even in Midjourney. If I was like writing a script from scratch, okay, I'm thinking of a story. Okay, a man walks into a room, he's blue shirt, sunglasses, the room is moonlit. I'm almost typing it like I'm talking to a script, or I'm writing a script, or talking to someone about a story that I want to write.
And you see what works and what actually translates, and then you iterate.
Exactly. I think about Stranger Than Fiction, that Will Ferrell movie where you always heard the VO, everything he was doing. It was like, that's how I prompt.
Yeah.
It's this happens and this happens, and then I see what I get. And now with remix mode and things like that, I'm able to then, okay, that didn't work out. Now I want this to be shot with a wide lens, like an Arri Alexa camera. I want to add some film grain. I want to have an archival look, or I want to be black and white. So it's almost, I just build upon as I go, and I find myself finding the best visuals that way versus copying in a prompt that worked for one thing and just changing a couple words. Like, I'm never really quite happy with it, but just having your couple keywords that you know works, like, we know photoreal works, we know cinematic works, we know film grain works, we know different camera angles and lens choices work. Like, having just a couple of those that your go-tos will really help shape your image quicker in a fast way. Yeah.
Do you upload image references if there's a killer shot from like Bob Richardson or somebody like that, that it's just exactly what you're going for? Do you upload those into Midjourney and reference them?
I've done that in the past. More recently, because I have such a huge database of my own images, because referencing Midjourney imagery is better. Like, you see that with the character reference tool.
Right.
If it's actually a Midjourney image that you're referencing, it does way better than if you pull an image off of Google.
Mm-hmm.
And the fidelity is obviously shitty, and it's not as clear as if you did it on Midjourney. So I typically, I put my images through like Magnific, and then I bring those back into Midjourney. Like, if I have a shot that I really love the lighting of it, I'll use that at reference to lighting. Or if I love the way a building looked, or a car looked, or the way a person's dressed, I use that kind of referencing. But it's better to reference Midjourney images because it keeps the image crisp and the details there.
That makes sense. Dave, always a pleasure and a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you again.
Yeah, you too, Nick. Appreciate you.
All right. Here, as always, are some key takeaways from this conversation with Dave Clark. Number one, use AI for previs and pitching. AI tools can greatly assist in pre-visualizing film shots, helping directors pitch their movies and helping DPs plan out scenes effectively by trying out an infinite number of different shots, concepts, lighting, cameras, and lens combinations. This is one of many use cases where AI does not replace the work humans do, but enhances it and streamlines it. Number two, be subtle when using AI. In another Dave's short that integrated AI with live-action filmmaking, the AI element is apparent but very subtle. He was super selective in what he used AI for. And for everything else, he stuck to traditional filmmaking with real actors, a DP, a full crew, etc. It's tempting to push the boundaries of AI, but that can just look silly. I recommend checking out another to see how nuanced and therefore effective Dave's approach was. Number three. Don't be a hater. There's a ton of hate around AI and its use in filmmaking, which is entirely understandable. I'm not going to go into the ethical discussions around whether or not it's theft, because regardless of it being a valid argument, it's a rabbit hole, and the truth is AI is coming, and it is coming fast. The best approach is to seek to understand these tools, because they're going to be a part of the process, just like CGI. Yes, of course, always, always advocate for using these tools ethically. But to ignore them, protest them, or shame others for using them just isn't helping anyone. Anyway, guys, thanks as always for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with your friends and family on social media? Don't forget to follow the show at Nick Taylor Horror Show. That's Nick Taylor Horror Show on TikTok and Instagram. Thanks again for listening to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. We scare because we care. Hey guys, one last thing before you head off, and this is The Howl. How would you like a monthly newsletter featuring a recap of the latest horror news, my personal movie recommendations, updates from the show, and cool stuff I've recently discovered in the world of horror? If that sounds like something you'd enjoy, sign up for my monthly email newsletter, The Howl. You can join by visiting nicktaylor.com/thehowl today.